92.3 Inspiration FM, Nigeria's number one family radio station.
Hello, good afternoon to you. Welcome to Under the Sun, brought to you by British Council. My name is Oscar, and the series is devised by Graham Morton, produced by Chidi Oko. Now, Under the Sun is the hottest stories by contemporary Nigerian writers dealing with everything under the sun. This week, we have a story written by a man called Mike Ekuno. It's titled A Paddle in and the High Seas. A Paddle and the High Seas, written by Mike Ekuno. And I also have a guest in the studio with me, whom you'll be meeting in exactly 11 minutes, okay? The number to call if you want to be part of the show for questions or contributions is 277-3923 or 277-2923, right here on Inspiration FM 92.3. Under the Sun is coming right up right now, and the story for this week is A Paddle and the High Seas, written by Mike Ekuno. Just have your questions or your contributions down. The number again, 277-3923 or 277-2923. Let's listen to what the story is all about.
Everything about me that morning was a disguise. From the borrowed tinted car to my clean-shaven face to the bank executive navy blue suit, everything. Even Tip Top Motel, where we're headed, was chosen as a getaway for its remoteness. It was one day I needed anonymity. I needed to be like a grain of sand on the seashore. Whichever way the scale of justice or injustice chose to tilt, life would never be the same again. The judgment of the appeal court in the election petition against me was coming up in an hour's time. If the appeal was dismissed, my next 4 years as chairman of Okito local government would be assured. But if it was allowed and my opponent won, I would be automatically free from the demands of the militants. Like vultures, after one carcass had been devoured, they would move to the next carcass and I'd be free. The freedom that comes from being of no use, that freedom itself is death. Life was no use without the monthly flow of revenue allocation from my local government, not to mention the perks of office, overseas trips with diplomatic passports, nights at Abuja's best hotels with full complements of Man Nobi Wood allowance, royal fathers falling over one another to see me. What is life without these? "Sir," responded Obasi, seated in the front passenger seat. That was when I realized I had been thinking a shadow too loud. No, not for you," I reassured my so-called chief security officer. In reality, he was my personal henchman. I had put him on the government payroll immediately after I had won the election, or better still, was declared winner. We approached the gates of the hotel. The driver slowed down and pressed the horn. The gateman appeared with a wad of passes and the bar went up. We entered with Eche winding down his window to receive a pass. He dropped it on the armrest between the two front seats, number 001. We were their first motorized guest. I was not surprised. At that time of the day, movements in hotels are usually outwards, not inwards. Eche drove to the reception, one of the many blocks of buildings in the mini estate. I thought of how the detached chalets, far flung from each other, would afford the anonymity I so much needed. When Eche came to a stop, Obasi opened his door and came down. He doubles as my protocol officer, and I watched him disappear inside the reception to get me a chalet. Presently, Obasi re-emerged with a uniformed staff member pointing the direction to him. As he re-entered the car, the driver drove off on cue to chalet 13C. The receipt read Chief John Amadi. The name was also a disguise and sounded as curt and as anonymous as they come. I thought about the name and an involuntary smile crossed my lips. There must be dozens of John Amadis in this place. I stepped into Chalet 13 after Obasi had inspected it and returned to give the all clear. The door closed behind me and I found I was sweating. This perspiration belied Port Harcourt's cool weather that morning. Whether it was caused by the suit I wore or the suit at the court, it was hard to tell. I tuned on the TV, where a SuperSport channel was showing highlights of the UEFA matches played yesterday. Another day, perhaps, but not today. I continued surfing for the prize channel of the day. SuperSport 2, SuperSport 3, CNN, one blurred channel, an Arabic one. Don't they have NTA here? I asked angrily of no one in particular. I went over to the TV set and tuned it manually. Then, like one who finally sees his name on an interview shortlist, NTA appeared on the screen. The courtroom scene was unmistakable. I had been a regular there while the case was in progress. As the cameraman swept the room with his lens, I could see the members of my legal team, my opponent's lawyers too, then lawyers representing the electoral body, a lot of my supporters, and party cadre. I looked to see my challenger, Chief Rufus Ogologo, but he wasn't there. Had his lawyers also advised him to stay away like mine? Was it because he couldn't face losing again? The courtroom and its electronic satellites in thousands of homes and one hotel awaited the entry of the judge. Outside, Obasi monitored proceedings on his transistor radio under the mango tree. He jumped to his feet on sighting me outside the door. Go to the bar and get me a drink.
Yes, sir.
Before he returned with a bottle of brandy and glass, the reading of the judgment was well underway. I poured a tall brandy and moved my chair closer to the TV.
The testimony of PW24 contradicts the evidence of the Electoral Commission as given on Form 005 in respect of votes cast at the Central Ward on the day of election. But DW7 in his testimony confirms that his signature on the said form is authentic and that PW24 duly authenticated the votes counted at the said ward.
This was a minus for my opponent. I drank to that tactical victory, a battlefront victory as it were, but the war was far from over. I sat back and lit my first Benson and Hedges of the day. There under the mango tree outside was DW7. I got up and patted the window blinds to peep at him with his radio glued to his ears. My henchman, Obasi, had been the head of my terror squad during the elections. I could vividly recall the incident at the central ward that the judge had just referred to. We had thumb-printed 2,300 ballot papers in my garage, and it was the lot of Obasi to get them swapped with genuine ballots. At 6:30 p.m. on that day, he left with his boys. At Central Ward, voting had just ended and the officials and party agents gathered to count the ballots. Then, everybody ran away like chicks at the sight of a hawk. The assailants made for the ballot box. They were not taking it away. In a moment, its contents had been swapped with the thumb-printed cargo. To provide a decoy, the assailants chased after Jew, my party agent, and kidnapped him. Almost as soon as it started, it was over. People reappeared one by one from their hideouts. Count was taken and Jude was found missing. The attackers must have come from my opponents, the others reasoned, and went ahead with counting of the ballot. Counting over, the officials declared the results of the ward.
Chief Rufus Ogologo of FGP, 23 votes. Chief Johnson Amakri of PPN, 145 votes. Mrs. Boma Jerry Hart of RIP, 3 votes. Chief Brown Igirigi of TDB, 2,077 votes. Invalid ballots, 52 votes.
That gave me a clear victory in the most populous ward. With that, my overall victory was fait accompli. Chief Ogologo's recourse to the election tribunal was an effort in futility. I had all three members of the tribunal in my pocket. 2 million naira to each of them delivered safely through a go-between. But with the appeal court, it hadn't been easy making an inroad. There were 5 members, each came from a different part of the country, and was quartered in a secluded government guest house. My go-between said we should earmark 5 million naira for each of them. But I had my suspicions. Egunje, no get receipt, was how Obasi used to put it. By that he meant bribery should be done cautiously, as it was not refundable. Even with that king's ransom, my go-between said the jury was a no-no. Now it was too late to do anything about it. Like a swimmer whose life jacket punctured halfway to the shoreline, I decided to take my fate into my hands. From what was coming from the TV live transmission, the shore appeared to be a sure banker. The deep-throated cough of the judge brought me back to the broadcast. However, the evidence of the fingerprint expert fatally flaws the submission of the electoral body that the violent incident at the central ward had no effect on the ballots inside the box. According to him, all 2,300 ballots could be resolved to only 5 different fingerprints. The expert appears a credible witness, and this court has no reason to discountenance his evidence. We are therefore left with no choice but to cancel the election at the said ward. All 2,300 votes cast there are hereby declared null and void. We are left with the remainder of the ballots cast in the other centers, amounting to 9,200. Of this number, the final results now stand thus. Chief Brown Igirigi of TDB, 3,158. Chief Rufus Ogologo of FGP, 3,620 votes. 3,620 votes. 3,620 votes. Chief Johnson Amakri of PPN, 1,735 votes.
And that was A Paddle and the High Seas, written by Mike Ekuno. And I have in the studio with me the program coordinator of LEAP Africa, Leadership, Effectiveness, Accountability, and Professionalism, an NGO since May 2002, Ojei Vagba. Am I right?
Quite correct, yeah.
Welcome to the show.
You're welcome, thank you very much.
Okay, now OJ will be with me in the studio while you call in on 277-3923 or 2923 for your comments or your contributions. Okay, so we'll be looking forward to that. OJ, what have you deduced so far from the story, A Paddle and the High Seas?
Okay, basically, I think this is just what we get to experience in this part of the Sahara.
Yeah, go on, I'm listening.
Okay, as it relates to electoral rigging and much more.
Okay.
And also, it's quite interesting to note the expectations and the intent of the public office holders, or prospective public office holders also, based on the story we just listened to.
All right. Okay, I had a chat with Mike, a phone call with him, and I'm going to play that in a couple of minutes. So you have an idea of what Mike was trying to say through his own story.
Right.
But in a nutshell, this story is about political corruption, election fixing, and the endless saga of corruption. Now, you working with Lee, being the program coordinator, what instances have you come across when it comes to the issue of corruption in the country or generally?
Okay. Through our program, through one of our youth programs, precisely the Integrity Institute, which was funded by the UK government's Global Opportunities Fund over a 2-year period in 2005 to 2008, we were able to get across to over 1,000 young Nigerians in over 5 cities in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And, the instances are just so many, really. Individual lack of courage, lack of moral courage, inability to resolve conflicts of interest, even amongst young people.
Okay.
But importantly, our own intervention has been to awaken the consciousness of young people to the fact that either through our actions or inactions, we are a part of the corruption challenge.
Directly or indirectly.
Yes.
Let's see who this is on the line. Okay, let's see. Hello, good afternoon. Okay, let's that call at 277-3923 or 277-2923 if you have any questions or contributions. I have OJ Ivagba, the program coordinator, Leap Africa, in the studio with me. Now, you just heard a story written by Mike Ekuna, A Paddle and the High Seas. I'm going to play the phone interview I had with him earlier on to give you an insight as to what Mike was trying to say through his story.
Yes, my name is Mike Ekuna. I'm a young man. I work in the film industry, and I read estate management, graduating from the University of Nigeria, and I'm a writer, married with children.
What was responsible for this particular title? What was the inspiration for it?
Thank you very much. A Paddle and the High Seas. A paddle is what you use to navigate the waters, especially little smaller rivers. But when now you're talking of the high sea, where you need maybe a powered engine, and you're going with a paddle, and the high sea sweeps off your paddle, and then you're left stranded on the high seas, you know, it's terrible. And it's a proverb, actually, because the play, the story is set in the River Rhine community in River State. And if you make a proverb in that part of the country that the sea has swept off your paddle, it's like a tragedy. Everybody understands what you're saying. So when this major character politician, his paddle used to be his money, deep watches from which he was able to corrupt the process and buy votes and buy election results. When it got to a state that his money couldn't make a way for him, it meant that the high seas has swept off his paddle and he was left stranded.
Okay, do you think corruption is in everyone, or what do you think is responsible for someone being corrupt? Is it poverty or is it greed? What is your take on this?
From being one of the most corrupt countries in the world, we should be able to provide the best sociologists and experts in psychology on corruption. But having said that, I think corruption has to do more with loose repercussion. If the consequence you're to get is lenient, then everybody ultimately will not see the need to be straight. You understand? So every human being has the tendency for good or evil in him. And part of the thing that suppresses the evil is the fact that you run a risk of being caught. Apart from our natural anchor, apart from our natural whatever that holds us back, maybe religion or moral, when that one is not helped, is not assisted by a system that punishes crime. So I think that's the major thing. Just have to put the checks and balances in place and implement them and enforce them. And that's how to discourage corruption.
On the issue of corruption, what is your ultimate solution? I know, for example, in a country like, I think, China, some things that people get away with here, some people get killed and sentenced to death. What do you think should be the ultimate punishment for corruption, if you had a choice?
The ultimate punishment for me should be the retrieval of everything, every single thing that the corrupt person corruptly acquired. That's the beginning. Then some terms of imprisonment to serve as deterrent. Yeah, my final word is that we should keep hope alive. Nigeria has good people, and we shouldn't give up. We shouldn't always look at the negatives. We should use ourselves as examples for the positive.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. God bless you.
Okay, welcome back. That was Mike Ekuna, and we have a caller here. Hello.
Hello.
What's your question or contribution? Welcome to Under the Sun.
Yes, my name is Vivian, and I've been listening in on your show, and I just wanted to add that, you know, corruption is something that's really, really, it's really bad, it's really serious, and it's eating away at the society right now. It's one of the reasons why we're so backward in society right now. Thank you.
You share Vivian's take that the country is backward because of corruption?
Yes, because of corruption, because of, like I said earlier, inability to resolve conflicts of interest, and actually the nonchalance of the average Nigerian to get actively involved in the political process. We all typically want to sit behind and expect a good result afterwards, but we really do not actively engage ourselves even in something as little as political education. You know, people tell you they don't want to have a wasted vote. It's going to be rigged after all. So I voted for the bad guys.
So why bother myself? Why stress myself?
Why stress myself, yes.
Now, there was a question I asked Mike as to corruption. You know, is someone naturally corrupt, or is it the circumstances that make him corrupt, or what's your take on that?
I think those who study sciences will tell us, well, human beings in our natural state, we are brutish and much more. So you need some checks to keep you civilized, as it were. However, if you were raised in a system or a structure whereby, like the Nigerian paradigm, over decades of military rule, absence of clear law and order, rule of law, you soon begin to think, well, everything is okay in as much as I'm about my end. They tell you the end justifies the means. With such corrupt lines, you find a situation like Nigeria where people can justify the reason for everything, and they'll cite 1,006 other examples.
Okay.
Who are not only going free, but being praised for it by even the media.
Okay, well, if you just tuned in, welcome to Under the Sun, brought to you by British Council. We just had a chat with the writer of the short story titled A Paddle and the High Seas, Mike Ekuno. And you can call in for your to contribute or to ask a question, 277-3923 or 277-2923. I have OJ Evagba, the program coordinator of Leap Africa, with me in the studio. Moving away from corruption, there's the problem. And they say the first step to solving a problem is to identifying it. We've identified the problem of corruption. Mike mentioned heavy penalties for those who are caught. You know, first of all, the money should be taken back and they should be sentenced to jail. And I know that in countries like, I think, China, where there's a death sentence for half the things people get away with here. What's your take on the issue of the sentence and the penalty or punishment for corruption?
The China example you cited is quite quite extreme.
Extreme.
Yes, you know. However, you know, sometimes we just think it's just, oh, he just stole some money and I got back the money. There are other people who have integrity, who are unable to steal a naira, and it's something like you delaying someone's salary by 3 months. And he stays at home and he has no money and he has no other corrupt tendencies like you have. And your own children are in Switzerland. His own kids can't afford school. They thereby play at home. They get picked up on the road by some other corrupt policemen and probably lose their life that way. So you can see the implication and the gravity of corruption. Sometimes we just think, oh, I just kept their money by 90 days. What's the big deal?
But do you think the penalty or the punishment in place now is enough to deter people from
corruption? It's not. It is very much insignificant. It is trifling. I think I would like to see a society where people, we need to get this money back. We need to get these properties back. But we need to show a form of deterrent, or that we need to put them. What I would suggest is community service. In this part of the world, we don't see that. Put these people on the streets, let them sweep, let them, you know, the average Nigerian is already feels somewhat like a god. I'll pay my way out of it, even based on the scenario we listen to. Let them give back from what they've taken, not just refunding the money. You know, let them, you need to humble people, let them realize they are just human beings, and that I wouldn't suggest for them to get killed anyway.
277-3923, 277-2923. Feel free to call in for or any question or contribution you might have. I have OJ in the building, and this is Under the Sun, 25 minutes down, 1 p.m. right here at Inspiration FM. Let's see who this is on the line. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's the name, sir?
My name is Mike from Ijora.
All right, Mike, what's your question or contribution?
No, I only want to contribute that corruption has so much eaten into Nigeria. Just imagine, my sister went to Right Jam 2 weeks ago, and the immediator told them to pay 3,000. But because herself and 14 other people did not pay, they took those people who paid somewhere. They finished their exam under 1 hour. Then they came to collect their own booklets. The exam that was still there for 3 hours, 30 minutes, they collected their booklet under one and a half hours. Just imagine, the exam came out, she didn't pass. Other people who paid, they passed. So it is so terrible that even that eating to down the education sector, she read, she had sleepless nights, she paid for tutorial classes, all to no avail. Now look at it. Next time, what do you expect such a young girl to do? Won't she fall into the temptation of paying too?
Did you report? Oh, I really wish, Mike, if you can call us back, Well, that's a very sad instance where a child was a student was asked to pay money for. Then that's another angle, you know. Like I mentioned earlier on, the question now is: will she pay or won't she pay? Will she stand by her values and not pay and report to the authorities and risk the and risk failing the exam year after year if she bumps into the same set of people year after year? What's your take?
Basically, if we do nothing about it, the situation continues. And the challenge in Nigeria is over the years, we kept quiet about situations, and it now gets to a point where people can actually take papers somewhere else and write exams completely for candidates and come back there to submit. It's outrageous.
Let me see who's on the line here. Mike, if you're listening, please try to call back. I'd like to know more about that situation, because this is very fresh and it's very frightening. As in, they're outrightly asking for money without any fear of or any fear whatsoever.
Yeah, because it's virtually becoming accepted. It's virtually becoming acceptable. So if you are okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Under the Sun. Who's this?
Yeah, my name is Dal.
Dal.
Yeah.
All right. What's your question or contribution?
Well, down to what a couple of other callers have said, we've lost our values. We need to really turn back to our times of past, like our mothers and our fathers grew up here. These days, you see where some parents even actually pay for exams to be written for their children. It's very bad. Corruption is eating deep into our fabric in the society. We really need to do something. Government, mothers, fathers, churches, everybody. We have corruption in churches. We have corruption in organizations, you know. Someone has to take a stand. People have to begin to make a change, you know. This is a good program. I thank you for the work you're doing. I thank the guy who wrote the piece and the guy you have in the studio.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dal.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. And that will be our last caller for today. But just a quick summary of what we said. Everyone seems to be complaining. Everyone seems to be identifying the problem. And everyone even seems to be somewhat offering a solution. But at the end of the day, where do you think the change should start from, OJ?
It begins with each and every one of us. It begins with you. It begins with me. And basically, it's a mindset issue. You know, you don't have an option when it comes to corruption. It's not an option. Like you spoke about the lady, probably the next exam she should settle her way. No, that's not an option. So you think out of the box. What do you do to ensure you don't have this repeat itself? That's what happened in other parts of the world. But in this part of the world, people tell you, oh, I used to be good, but because of this reason, I am now bad. No, you are not that crayfish that bends to adversity. No, you know, it's a popular Nigerian saying, but you don't want to be that. I'm not crayfish in any way, so I don't bend because of that. You know, why don't you bend to do even something good after you've gone through a negative experience? Galvanize support and do something about it. And that's one of the things we do at LEAP. You know, sometimes you can't do it alone. You need to galvanize the support and together. Soon that ripple will turn out to be a mighty current, but then you need to do something and don't keep quiet about it. That's what we do here. We keep quiet about it, we talk about it on radio, and everybody goes back
to normal.
Say God day, maybe God day.
Well, President Obama, one of his speeches that I heard, he said it's all about change. If you can change one man, you can change a family. If you can change a family, you can change a town, then a country, and eventually the whole world. So I guess the sole message that we're passing out today is let that change start with you, the individual, and hopefully we will erode or erase the corrupt ones eventually. Thank you very much for joining me, OJ.
Thank you very much for having me here.
And thank you to the callers, Vivian, Mike, Dal, and those of you who tried to get in. To catch the same time next week right here at 1 p.m. on Inspiration FM. Under the Sun is brought to you by the British Council, and it has the hottest stories written by contemporary Nigerian writers dealing with everything under the sun. It's devised by Graham Mote and produced by Chidi Oku. My name is Oscar. The program continues with Titi right here on Inspiration FM.
92.3 Inspiration FM, a new sound of Lagos.